for a second, though. He settles between my legs, thrusting himself deep inside me in one swift, breathtaking movement, and my blood sings in my ears. It sounds like wind rushing past me as I stumble and fall, descending into a bottomless pit of madness.
Ren, oh shit, I think I'm gonna...
Even now, with him on top of me, driving himself into me over and over again, biting down on my collarbone, lighting the inside of my head up with invisible fireworks, I can't bring myself to admit that I'm about to come out loud. Ren feels it, though. He claims my mouth so savagely that I probably would have come from the kiss alone.
Good girl, good girl. He whispers hoarsely, let it happen, don't fucking fight it.
That's all I need to hear. I release the tight leash I've been holding over myself, and my very soul shatters apart, stealing the oxygen out of my lungs, and my fractured thoughts rise out of my head.
Ren!
I shout his name, I know I do, but there's no stopping it, I can't help it. He locks himself around me, holding me tightly in his arms as he grinds himself against me, his cock filling me to the hilt. I come, shaking and trembling, lights flashing in my eyes, and he snarls into the crook of my neck.
Steady, he whispers. Steady, steady. Shh, good girl, hold on tight. I'm not done with you yet.
He slows for a beat. Long enough to rain soft kisses down on my temple and the top of my head, gathering my hair and sweeping it out of my face, stroking his fingers over my cheeks and my lips.
Your fucking mouth, Elodie, he moans. The things I wanna do to your mouth.
He slips his fingers past my lips, pressing down on my tongue, and a low and terrible rumble works its way out of him, reverberating in my ear.
One of these days. God, just you fucking wait.
He picks up the pace again, his hips grinding against mine, one of his hands palming my breasts and rolling my nipple, pinching so hard that I let out a sharp cry. I cling onto him, addicted to the shifting and bunching of the muscles in his back as they tense under my hands. In this moment, he is a force of fucking nature, more powerful and frightening than the lightning and thunder that split the air apart the night I met him in the gazebo. He's fierce and demanding, nipping at my mouth with his teeth. His hands are rough, taking what they want from my body, bringing me closer and closer. The smell of him, the heat of him, the weight of him, the very sound of him raging as he draws closer to his own climax. I can't get enough of him. There's nothing else for me to do but hold on to him tight and ride out the storm. We come together. Fingers tightening, teeth gouging, bodies tangled together, breath frantic. And it's the most amazing thing I've ever fucking experienced. The hectic flow of my blood begins to slow. My muscles easing one by one, relaxing as Ren sags on top of me. And we spend a second catching our breath. And then Ren does something unexpected. He places his mouth on mine and kisses me with the utmost care. No tongue, no urgency, just a gentle moment where he kisses me and the fucking world stands still. I've had so many expectations of him in my head that this, I don't know what to do with this. Because never in my wildest dreams did I ever think that Ren Jacoby could be gentle.
29. Elodie. At the beginning of any new life, in any new place,
Time passes infinitely slowly. Every small detail of your surroundings is interesting, or annoying, or beautiful, or puzzling, and requires your full attention. But after a while, there are fewer and fewer new things to notice, and everything becomes familiar. The same thing that's happened at every other place I've ever lived happens at Wolf Hall, too. I know what to expect when I turn a corner. I know the shape of the trees outside my window, and even the shape of the trees in the distance at the far right side of the academy's boundary line, where the forest begins and reaches toward the horizon. I know the unique smell of the beeswax wood polish Jana, the academy's 70-year-old housekeeper, uses to hand polish the wood paneling every Wednesday. I know the hollow echo of voices that bounce around the high-ceiling hallways and classrooms whenever the bell rings. I know the honeyed quality of the light that pours in through the library windows. And I know the texture of the wooden desk beneath my fingertips in my French class. 2 weeks pass, and gradually, Wolf Hall begins to feel like a home of sorts. And every opportunity we get, Ren and I meet in the library's conveniently soundproofed microfiche room. Turns out that's what was behind Ren's secret hidden door. Or the attic. And even in my room once or twice, when I knew for sure that Karina wasn't going to barge in unannounced. Ren's ever himself, but I learn more and more of him every day. Unexpected doors open to me, revealing something about him. Details no one else knows, that I hoard to myself, the information more precious than gold or rubies. He hates the texture of peanut butter in his mouth. Whenever he smells the ocean, he thinks about losing one of his front teeth when he was 8. He thinks the word sesquipedalian is the best word in the English language, which is ironic because it means given to using long words, which he most certainly is. He secretly loves dogs, but won't admit to loving anything if he doesn't have to. Birds intrigue him. Sailing, swimming, and reading make him feel alive. We talk for hours. I know him now. But in the same vein, it often feels like I've barely scratched the surface when it comes to things to know about Ren. We trade secrets and kisses and breath. And we hide away from the world, making sure no one knows when we're together. I don't mind the sneaking around, or the thrill that chases up my spine when we come close to being caught. It just seems normal. The last weekend in February rolls around, and out of nowhere, the weather picks up. The gray sky's clear, and the rain quits relentlessly lashing at the academy's walls, and the temperature even manages to lift the mercury a little, rising into the 60s. It's been so long since I've seen the sun that the change in the weather, temporary though it might be, raises my spirits and makes me so giddy that Karina asks me if I'm doing drugs. I'm not saying I'd judge you if you were. I just don't think I've ever seen you this bouncy. On the front lawn of the academy, I stop bouncing on the balls of my feet, poking my tongue out at her. I just forgot how good vitamin D is. Don't you feel alive, like you could take on the world? I have to fly to New York this afternoon to get 2 fillings. No, I do not feel like I could take on the world, she says dryly. I mean, my mother's so fucking weird. She knows there are perfectly good dentists close by, but no, I have to go see her dentist. Yeah, but Andre's going with you, and you're gonna go out for a romantic dinner, and he got you tickets to see Hamilton. Once the dentist part's out of the way, you're gonna have an amazing time in the city, and you know it. She harumphs. I hate the fucking dentist. I can't stand the smell or the sound of the drill. Dentists get away with all kinds of fucked up things, you know? The amount of women who get sexually assaulted by dentists is... She puffs out her cheeks. The number's frighteningly high. If you ever need to be put out for a procedure, always make sure you have someone come in and sit with you. Otherwise, you'll never know who's been touching you. A cheery thought to start Saturday off right, I say, beaming at her. It's gonna be fine. You'll be in and out, and then you can enjoy your time with Andre. She smiles, but she doesn't seem too convinced. What are you gonna do today? Sorry I'm bailing on you again. Oh, you know, I'm gonna sink my teeth into this. I hold up the book in my hands. Harcourt delivered my new laptop and a bunch of other stuff last night. I can catch up on my Netflix to watch list if I want a distraction. Okay, well, next weekend, we'll do something cool, I promise. When Andre's black Ford F-150 pulls up into the turning circle, she groans like he's about to cart her off to hell instead of on a romantic weekend getaway. I smile at the retreating truck until my cheeks hurt, waving until it's out of sight. And then I'm up and running, heading down the driveway toward my own weekend getaway. The car is set back from the road, parked down a narrow gravel track that obscures it from sight. Black, sleek, and shining, the 66 Mustang Fastback looks brand new, even though it's well over 40 years old. Ren leans against the driver's door, head down, hair hiding his face. The faded gray t-shirt he's wearing pulls taut over his arms and across his back, his low-slung jeans hanging off his hips. His scruffy, worn boots are missing, replaced by a pair of black Chuck Taylor high tops. A slow smile spreads across his face when he hears my feet crunching on the gravel. I was beginning to think you were gonna bail on me, he says. He still hasn't looked at me. He does this a lot, refraining from lifting his head and making eye contact with me until the very last second, until I'm standing right in front of him. He finally looks up at me from under those expressive dark eyebrows, and my toes curl in my shoes. How do you even know it's me? You're 5'4", Lily, he says, smirking. You have a very short stride. Rude. True, he counters, hooking his fingers through the belt loops of my jeans, pulling me toward him. He brings his mouth down on mine, and the birds stop singing in the trees. The air stills. The sun burns a little brighter. When he releases me, he slides his hand up inside my shirt, drawing small circles over my skin with the tips of his fingers. You're late, he rumbles. I don't like to be kept waiting. I give him a look, one that he smiles at, running his tongue over his bottom lip, wetting it. We trade these silent exchanges often now, my wordless chiding in return for his entertained, half-felt apologies. You're not the boss of me, I remind him. Aren't I? He ducks down for another kiss, but I scoot back out of reach. Most definitely not. Fire ignites in his eyes. If I tell you to do something, don't you do it? If I ask you for something, don't I get it? He muses. Only because I deign to do or give you what you want, Jacoby. There'll come a day when I won't feel so accommodating. Well, I guess I'll just have to live in fear of that day then, he purrs, prowling after me. I shriek, running around the car, but it's no use. He was right. I'm 5'4", and my legs are much shorter than his. He catches me with ease, locking his arms around my waist and lifting me off the ground. In the car with you, he growls into my ear. We've got places to be. He holds me against his side with one arm, freeing up a hand so that he can open the passenger door of the car and bundle me inside. I land with a soft oof on the leather bench seat. He slams the door behind me before I can play at making a run for it. 2 seconds later, he's sliding himself into the car beside me and turning the key in the ignition. There's something pretty fucking spectacular about Ren behind the wheel of a car. I've never seen him drive before, Pax always runs the Riot House boys up to the academy whenever the weather's bad enough to warrant the short drive. Seeing him like this now, his actions sure and confident as he throws the Mustang into gear and hits the gas, turns me on in the weirdest way. The strangest things tend to turn me on now. The act of watching him fix his coffee, popping the lid off his to-go cup, licking the foam off of it before sprinkling the tiniest bit of sugar across the top of his latte and snapping the plastic back on the cup again. The way his eyes flit quickly and surely over the pages of a book when he's reading something he finds fascinating. The way he absent-mindedly pulls his lip through his teeth when he's thinking deeply. Fuck. The way he looks in his clothes and the sight of his bare feet, and the way my whole being vibrates with satisfaction whenever I'm lucky enough to earn a burst of laughter out of him. All of it makes me want to rip my clothes off and fuck him stupid.
"Did you bring the stuff?"
he asks, giving me a quick sidelong look as he pulls out onto the road. I pat the bag I brought with me, raising my eyebrows. "Yes, though why the hell you told me to bring a swimsuit, I do not know. The sun might be out, but there's no way you're getting me in a lake. The water is going to be freezing." The corner of his mouth lifts up.
"Don't you worry that pretty little head of yours. I'm not going to have you freeze to death, Elodie Stillwater."
We burn down the mountain in record time. He drives even faster than Karina, but I don't feel the same lurching in my stomach when he takes a corner. Ren handles his car like a pro, braking ahead of the turns and speeding out of them with so much control that I have to press my knees together to stop the heavy, hot ache between my thighs. God, I am such a fucking loser. In town, Ren takes a series of turns through residential streets, avoiding the main roads as he navigates us toward our destination. "You're really not going to tell me where we're going?" I ask. He gives his head an exaggerated shake, biting back a smile.
"Not on your life. We're nearly at our first port of call anyway."
Mere minutes later, we're pulling into the parking lot of a ramshackle-looking building that looks like a rundown Western saloon. The name, Cosgroves, is scrawled in peeling, once white, now gray, paint down the side of the heavily weathered lap siding. Ren pulls up next to a rusting old Buick and kills the engine, looking at me with a weird expression on his face. Takes me a second to recognize it as nerves. I don't think I've ever seen him look nervous before. He trails off, still deciding what he's going to say.
This place is mine, he says.
I jerk my thumb behind me, out of the Mustang's rear window.
The bar? Yeah, the bar.
What do you mean, it's yours?
I bought it last year.
How? You were a minor.
I have a guy, Edward. He manages my affairs for me, just signs off on the legal stuff I can't do. At least he did, but I'm 18 now, so...
I shake my head, blinking at him. With what money? He laughs bitterly, scrubbing his hands through his hair and then down over his face.
Ugh. With some of my annual stipend.
He doesn't sound happy when he says this. He seems frustrated and pretty fucking miserable, actually.
My grandparents were very wealthy people, Elodie. They gave Mercy and me an annual allowance to survive on. January 1st, every year without fail, an obscene amount of money is deposited in my checking account. And every year, I do my best to burn through the lot before spring.
Holy hell. I figured since his father's just as high up in the military as my own, that his family had money. I didn't think for a second that he has his own. And do you manage it? Do you fritter away all your money by April? I ask. He gives me a tight, sharp smile. Never. I'd probably have to buy a small nation with a massive national debt to clear out my bank account at this point. Fuck. I have houses in Europe and Australia. I've got more stocks and shares than you can imagine. And when investing my money became far too responsible, I just started wasting it. Ridiculous vacations, boats, drugs, lots of drugs, he says. And then I got bored of that too, so I started buying failing businesses that would never make any money and sat back to watch the fireworks when my father found out. Cosgrove's has the added benefit of being a licensed bar where I could come and get fucked up whenever I wanted to, so...
Right. Makes sense.
I laugh a little nervously.
I live so carefully, watching the balance on the American Express my father loads up for me. It's one of the ways that he likes to remind me that he owns me, and I've never been able to forget it. Fall out of his good graces, and that's it. I'm scraping by on next to nothing until he decides I've redeemed myself. Turns out Ren's never had to worry about money. He leans forward, resting his chin in his hands, staring out of the windshield into the empty road on the other side of the lot.
I'd give it all away, he says morosely. Only my father would find out and send more. For the Jacobies, money is an infinite resource, springing from a well that will never run dry. Mercy loves it, and I hate it more than I can say. Ungrateful, right? There are so many people out there struggling to make ends meet, and I'm bitching that I have too much fucking money. God, I even make myself sick. Come on, let's go.
He explodes from the car, jumping out so quickly that his door is slammed closed and he's already opening mine before I register that he's gone. The inside of Cosgrove's is a confusion of mismatched paraphernalia. There are quirky, at-odds items everywhere, ranging from stuffed moose heads to Native American wall tapestries. From old black-and-white photographs of construction workers sitting on the ledges of half-built skyscrapers in the 1920s, to an old English telephone box sitting in the corner like it just inexplicably fell out of the fucking sky and landed there all by itself. The bar smells of stale beer and sawdust. But it's a reassuring smell, and even the sticky film that covers the chairs, the tabletops, the bar's worn counter, and pretty much everything else inside the building doesn't detract from its weird, otherworldly charm. Ren stands in the center of the quiet bar with his hands in his pockets, looking around like he doesn't know what to do with the place.
There are customers, he observes. We don't usually have those.
A short, squat man bullies his way through a set of swinging saloon doors that presumably lead out back, his expression darkening when he sees Ren.
No text, he grumbles, clattering behind the bar. I thought we agreed you'd text before you showed up. Can't just go showing up out of the blue spying on me, he grouses. I agreed to no such thing.
Ren sighs wearily.
It's my bar. I can show up whenever I feel like it. And I'm not spying on you, Patterson. We want breakfast, that's all.
Patterson squints at him.
We?
Ren tips his head in my direction, where I'm leaning against the bar. Patterson sees me and lets out a sigh of relief.
Well, at least you didn't bring those animals down here with you. That's a small mercy.
He's talking about Dashiell and Pax, I'm sure. Walking down the length of the bar, the old man stops in front of me, looking me up and down.
Got all your own teeth? He asks.
I try not to let out a surprised laugh. Yes, sir.
Then you ain't from town. You got more money than sense and think the world still owes you?
I shake my head gravely. No, sir.
Then you probably ain't from that school either. I don't know where he found you, pretty girl, but you look too nice for him. My advice, get out now while you still can.
I don't even know what to say to that. I don't tell him that I am a student at Wolf Hall, though.
I feel like he'll be less enamored with me if I correct his assumption. Ren stands behind me, growling under his breath.
She is too nice for me, but that's none of your damn business, old man.
We order a disgusting amount of food and eat it out back on a picnic bench, away from the prying eyes of the four customers in the bar. Once we're done, Ren ushers me back into the car and tells me we're leaving Mountain Lakes altogether. For the first time since I arrived at Wolf Hall, I leave the town and I don't look back.
30. Ren. Pre-Elodie, my best behavior looked very different to this. I would have reamed Patterson out for his sass, and I would have probably kicked everyone out of the bar, too. There have been so many times since Elodie became my girlfriend that I've curbed my anger and not lashed out. It's gotten to the point that I'm even doing it when she's not around, plagued by a conscience that I've paid little heed to up until now. Behind every action, every thought, and every word lies the nagging question, what would Elodie think of me if she could see me now? It's a burden, this shift in attitude. It doesn't come naturally. It requires constant work, and the new restrictions I've placed upon myself chafe like nothing else. She didn't ask me to change. She hasn't really asked anything of me, but this gnawing desire to make her happy, to make her proud of me, is ever constant. For her, I want to be better than my soiled, rotten soul has ever been before. The drive is long enough to require music. I turn on the radio, and Elodie immediately changes the station from the grinding, hardcore metal I usually opt for to something more mainstream and folky. I hate the hipster craze and all of the Americana crap that came along with it, but for the first time, I don't feel like I'm going to smash my fist into the dashboard when I hear the strummed guitars and the pretentious, lilting lyrics. She seems to like it. So I like it too. I try not to react when she starts singing. Her voice sweet and bright, always a second offbeat or very slightly out of tune. But my insides are rioting. She doesn't care if she doesn't hit every single note. She sings for the sheer enjoyment of it, laughing at me giddily when she catches me looking at her out of the corner of my eye. She's everything good and light in this world, and being in her presence is like emerging from a prison cell after so many long, dark years and finally feeling the sun on my face. I'm so broken and corrupted that it's always felt like the rough, jagged-edged pieces of me would never fit back together again. I never even dared think such a thought. But somehow, over the past few weeks, Elodie's been putting me back together, and she hasn't even been trying. We arrive at the estate just after midday. We're 2 short hours from the academy, but we might as well be half a world away. The day feels full of possibility, bursting at the seams with potential. Elodie's brow furrows with confusion as I drive us through the high metal gates and down the long, sweeping driveway toward the imposing structure up ahead. "Monmouth House?" she says quizzically. "That's what that plaque just said." "Plaque?" I pretend I have no idea what she's talking about. "Yes, the one that was mounted on that giant sign in front of the gates. Ren, what the hell are we doing here? Are we about to get arrested for trespassing? I can't get a criminal record. Colonel Stillwater will kill me." She can be so melodramatic sometimes. I throw off the jolt of nerves that attacks me when I see the white G-Wagon parked in front of the house, giving myself a stern talking to. "Keep your fucking cool, man. Since when have you ever been worried about what these fucks think anyway?" I am tense as hell, though. Denying it serves no point whatsoever. This is something very new for me. Untrodden ground, and I have no fucking clue how any of this is going to play out. I pull up alongside the G-Wagon, steeling myself for what's to come. "Ren, seriously, this looks like private property. Shouldn't we..." She looks around, worry in her beautiful blue eyes. "Shouldn't we find a hotel or something? I don't think this place rents out rooms." "Not by the hour, anyway," I say, smirking. I twist the key in the ignition, cutting the engine. Right on cue, Calvin appears in the open front doorway, dressed impeccably as always in Armani. Elodie scoots down in her seat, doing her best to become invisible. "Ren," she hisses. I wind down the window, offering a curt smile to the tall, gray-haired man who approaches the car. "Master Ren." His greetings have always been warm, his smile always genuine. I lean my arm on the door, grinning at him. "Hey, Cal, what's up?" I've known Calvin since I was 5 years old. He was there when my grandparents died, my mother's parents. He was the one who consoled me when I skinned my knees. He was the one who used to sneak me cookies after dinner when I was sent to bed without dessert for not finishing my meals. A light goes on in his eyes when he notices Elodie sitting next to me in the passenger seat. "Ah, a guest. Do my eyes deceive me?" All right. No need to lay it on so thick. I've brought a guest home with me. Calvin, this is Elodie. Elodie, this is Calvin. Don't make a fuss. Where are they? Your father hasn't arrived yet. Mrs. Jacoby's with her book club in the library. I cringe, reeling away from that title. Calvin's been an integral part of this family for a very long time, but at the end of the day, he's still the hired help. He can't call my father's bitch of a wife Patricia, so he uses the title that used to belong to my mother, and I fucking hate it. Don't tell her I'm home, okay? He nods. I'll put the car in the garage for you. Thanks, man. I turn to Elodie, about to ask her if she's got her bag, but the stunned look on her face stops me in my tracks. Home? She hisses. You brought me home? Oh, God. She looks like she's about to have a heart attack. It's not a big deal. It's just a building with a lot of fancy rooms inside. Her face blanches of all color. Ren, you told me to bring a bikini and some fucking lingerie. You didn't tell me to bring nice, respectable clothes that would be suitable for your parents. Calvin gives me a look that says it all. You're in for it now. Leave the keys. I'll give you guys some time to gather your stuff and head inside, he says, his smile stretching from ear to ear. It's very nice to meet you, Miss Elodie. Likewise, Calvin, she replies in a very high-pitched voice. I get out of the Mustang and walk around the other side, opening her door for her. Get out of the car, Elodie. She glares at me balefully, crossing her arms over her chest. Are you insane? Have you lost your fucking mind? Better not curse so much in front of my father. He's a Republican and a Christian. She throws her head back, closing her eyes and pulling a face that looks worse than pained. Ren, this isn't... Romantic? It really isn't, but there are things here I wanted to show you, I tell her. I thought you always told the truth, she says accusingly. I lift both eyebrows, shrugging. When did I lie? When you didn't tell me we'd be coming here. I laugh, even though I know it's going to annoy the shit out of her. Come on, little E, that wasn't a lie. That was an omission of the facts. Now, please get out of the car before I have to come in there and get you. She knows I'll do it. I put her in there for crying out loud. I'll just as easily carry her out again, kicking and screaming if I have to. Sulking rather dramatically, she gets out of the car, shooting a look my way that would flay any other mere mortal alive. I'm used to her emotional squalls, though. They last all of 5 minutes, and then they're over again. This is really unfair, she groans. You're supposed to give people warning so they can mentally prepare for this kind of stuff, and I really didn't bring anything to wear. Nothing? Not unless you think a couple of lace thongs and some high heels would be appropriate dinner attire. You won't find me complaining. Jesus, my dick's getting hard just fucking thinking about it. Asshole, she wails. Help me. This is going to be a disaster. I can only keep the joking around for so long. Seeing her this worked up has something inside me pulling taut like a bowstring until I feel like I can't breathe around the wretchedness of it. I'm such a fucking joke. Once upon a time, I thought I wanted to hurt this girl. It's karma that it hurts me more than I can bear to see her in distress. I pin her against the side of the car, cupping her face in my hands, brushing her hair back behind her ears. Calm, E. It's okay. I wouldn't throw you under the bus. I ordered a few items online for you and had them sent ahead. Everything you could need is already inside, waiting for you. Her panic fades, turning rapidly into annoyance. She slaps my arm. Cruel, Ren Jacoby, you should have led with that. I'm sorry, Jesus, stop hitting me, I'm sorry. She eventually does stop hitting me, long enough for me to kiss her. She's so fucking small in my arms. She melts into me, grumbling half-heartedly as she kisses me back. Come on, seriously, we need to get inside before my stepmother sees us, I'm really not kidding. Elodie reads the genuine warning in my eyes and relents. All right then, fine, lead the way. I suppose other people have visited here and made it out alive, right? All I can do is laugh. She has no idea what she's in for. Monmouth House was built in 1878 by a wealthy oil tycoon by the name of Adar Jacoby. He was the first and only Jewish man, as far as the state records of Texas will attest, to ever strike a significant reservoir and make his fortune. He married an English woman by the name of Eleanor Fairfax Monmouth and built the house in her honor, giving it her family name. When Elodie steps into the sprawling foyer for the first time, I see the place through her eyes, and the entire thing feels far too pretentious for words. The white marble with gray and gold veins snaking through it underfoot speaks of just how much money went into building this place. The high ceilings, dotted with elaborate, glimmering chandeliers that refract the sunshine pouring in through the arched 15-foot-high windows at the top of the staircase, scattering rainbows all over the walls. Everywhere you look, there are austere, foreboding oils of my dark-haired ancestors scowling disapprovingly down at us with judgment in their eyes. Elodie takes in the lavish decor, the opulent rugs, and the sumptuous furnishings with a level of horrified awe that makes me wonder if this wasn't a huge mistake after all. I am not this. I've been very careful to be something entirely removed from this disgusting show of wealth. I wear my clothes until they literally fall apart, and then I wear them some more just to be fucking difficult. I reject any and all suggestion of a haircut until I'm forced to take matters, and a pair of scissors, into my own hands, hacking at my hair with a practiced level of disorder that drives my father to drink. Mercy, with her outrageously expensive clothes and her perfectly manicured everything, fits in here. Even those equipped with a feeble imagination can see that I really fucking don't. I feel so far removed from this place that entering through the door is like cracking open the pages of a book you read a long time ago. Everything's familiar, as though the stories scribbled out on the pages feel like they happened to you, but they're so distant, so remote, that you know they aren't really your stories. I didn't really fall down the steps there and almost bite clean through my lip when I was 9. That was some other kid. And there, I didn't stand over there with my ear pressed to the heavy walnut door to the formal dining room, listening to my father fucking some young girl who just appeared out of the blue and stayed at the house for 3 weeks when I was 12. It doesn't matter that I can't remember what her name was. Or that Patricia was 3 rooms over when my father was eating some girl's pussy on the grand 20-person antique banquet table. Nope. None of it matters because that wasn't my life. That happened in another plane of existence. To another Wren, before Riot House and Wolf Hall, before Elodie. I refrain from kicking my shoes off. Patricia will have a conniption when she sees me tramping through the house with outside footwear on my feet, which is the sole reason why I leave them on. Elodie isn't a shit like me. She slides out of her Doc Martens, and Mariposa appears, as if the very existence of a pair of unattended shoes in the entryway created a portal through time and space, dragging her here to attend to the matter before polite society should notice such vulgarity. I have total faith that long after she dies, my old nursemaid will spontaneously return from the afterlife to make sure that correct etiquette is observed at all times within the walls of Monmouth House.
"Master Wren," she says, pointedly eyeing my feet.
Unlike Calvin, Mariposa's less happy to see me. She holds a grudge like no one else. She's still pissed about the slugs I put in her underwear drawer when I was 7. By the time she's gotten over that and worked her way through all the other shitty things I've done to her, she and I will have been dead 3 lifetimes over.
"They just had the carpet steamed," she fumes.
In her late 70s, she's so stooped and hunched over now that her line of sight is always locked onto people's feet. No wonder she's so good at keeping track of their footwear. And I'm sure they'll have them cleaned again next month, too, even though it's completely unnecessary. Where's Pickaxe? Her mouth scrunches into a sour grimace. Her eyes are sharp as flint.
Dead.
What do you mean, dead?
I mean dead. Found him bringing up blood in the stables. Ate the poison set out for the rats back in January. Your father shot him, put him out of his misery.
I look away, staring up at the sky out of the windows at the top of the stairs, trying to work my way around the tempest of emotion that's spinning around the inside of my head. Everything's moving so fast. My thoughts are so blurred. I can't make sense of what I've just learned. A warm hand takes mine.
Pickaxe?
Elodie whispers in question. Doesn't matter, I say, swallowing down the hard knot in my throat. Let's go.
Master Wren, your shoes!
Get fucked, Mariposa.
Dios mío!
She crosses herself when I walk past like I'm the very devil himself. My movements are wooden and mechanical as I climb the stairs. Elodie follows after me silently, still holding onto my hand, refusing to let go. I walk down the hall, past Mercy's wing of the house, past the left-hand turn that leads to the library, my father's office, and the separate rooms where he and Patricia sleep. At the very end of the hall, I open the door, recessed out of sight in its own little alcove that leads up to what used to be the servants' quarters. This stairway is nothing like the one we just came up. It's narrow and tight, barely wide enough to fit a man's shoulders. It's also so dark that anyone who isn't as familiar with the uneven steps as I am must place their hand against the rough stucco to brace themselves, to avoid tripping on the wobbly boards.
Jesus, where are you taking me?
Elodie mutters. Her voice is soft, but it sounds harsh and loud bouncing around the narrow space. Not much further, I tell her. You'll see soon enough. I turn the handle on the door at the top of the stairs, and it doesn't fucking open.
What the fuck? What's wrong?
I squeeze Elodie's hand, then let go of her. With both hands, I feel the weighty, cold metal of a padlock above the doorknob. A padlock that wasn't there before.
That motherfucker, I snarl.
Wren, seriously, what's going on? I may not have mentioned this before, but I'm kind of claustrophobic.
Ah, fuck. How have I been this stupid? I know this about her.
She might not have shared the information with me, but it makes complete sense given what I've read about her. This isn't the kind of place to be hanging around if you're afraid of tight spaces. Grimly, I tug on the lock to see how solid it is, and it's really fucking solid. My old man, I say, sighing. He's had Calvin put a lock on the door, and I don't have enough room to put my shoulder into it. We'll have to go back down so I can find a fucking screwdriver.
Or...
Elodie trails off. Her breath sounds a little labored, like it's hitching in her chest.
Or I could just pick the lock, she finishes.
Surprise creeps in over the top of my anger. You can do that? In the dark?
In the dark, underwater, with my hands tied behind my back. How do you think I found my way into your bedroom when you took my phone?
I assumed you'd just come in through the back. We always leave the kitchen door unlocked.
Shit.
She laughs nervously.
That would have been nice to know back then, I guess. Here, can you let me by?
She slides up the steps next to me, her tits brushing up against my chest, and my cock immediately stiffens. She smells like spring and sunshine and floral, like the tiny little white flowers that grow all over the ancient, crumbling walls of my father's chateau in France.
I want to kiss her so fucking badly.
My body wants far more than that, but now is not the time. I press my back against the wall behind me, managing to give her just enough room to sidle by so that she's in front of me. I hear her fiddling with the lock, a light rattling, and then silence as she stoops over, her breath no longer labored. It evens out, into long, steady, and even pulls at the air as she focuses on her work. She's only been working over the thing for a couple of seconds when I hear the metallic snap and a loud clang as the padlock drops to the top step. She opens the door and walks through it into the light corridor ahead. Her cheeks flame when she turns and sees the expression on my face.
What? What's that look for?
I'm reeling from the fact that she managed to get that lock to open.
Fucking reeling.
I know precisely why she learned that skill, and I know precisely why she would carry the tools required to pick a lock with her at all times. It's just still pretty fucking amazing. You're just full of surprises, Lily, I tell her, winking playfully. She still hasn't told me anything about her past in Tel Aviv. I've been waiting patiently for her to open up about it, but I'm not gonna fucking push her. You can learn all kinds of things on YouTube, she says. I watched 1,000 videos, learning how to do that in as many situations as possible. A cold, sickly feeling creeps up my back. I quickly brush it off, forcing a smile onto my face. Why would your father lock that door? Seems like a weird thing to do, she says, smoothly changing the subject. Scanning the hallway with the little porthole windows along its north-facing side and the four doors leading off from it on the other side, she frowns deeply. This was my mother's place, I say. She would come up here to paint and read. She used to sleep up here sometimes. I've claimed it as my space now, but my father doesn't like it. He says it upsets his new wife. It has nothing to do with Patty, though. He just hates that I'd rather spend time up here with the ghost of my dead mother instead of suffering downstairs with the rest of them in the land of the living. He threatens to clear everything out of here and brick up the door sometimes. Why hasn't he? Because he knows I'd burn the entire fucking house down if he did. She just nods, accepting this as something I would do. A truth about me, that makes sense. Are we gonna get in trouble for coming up here then? Is he gonna be angry? He's always angry. Don't worry though, he won't be angry with you, you're a guest. When you meet him, he'll be sweet and interested and charming, and you'll wonder how I could possibly hate him so much. You'll take his side and think I'm completely unreasonable when I don't fall down and worship at the fucker's feet. She blinks at me, owlishly. She's so fucking beautiful that the sight of her feels like a punch to the gut. Again, she shakes her head. No, I won't. I know all about sociopathic fathers, Ren. I've been dealing with one my entire life. I know the front they put on for the rest of the world. I'll always see through that charade, no matter how many other people it might fool. Come on, she smiles gently. Why don't you show me around? Tell me about your mom. I want to know all about her. The paintings are calmer than mine. The blues, blacks, grays, and whites are softer, so much subtler and more intentional than mine, too. Elodie paces the floorboards of my mother's studio, studying each canvas in turn, pulling back the dust cloths and letting the heavy sheets sigh to the floor. Her inquisitive eyes pick over the brush strokes, her fingertips poised just above the surface of the oil paint, as if she's reaching inside the painting in her mind, stroking them over the subject matter with a reverence that makes my chest pull tight. I'm far more comfortable painting my stormy landscapes. My mother painted people. She loved capturing the emotion and the intelligence in someone's eyes, and she was damn good at it, too. She was so talented, Elodie breathes. Who's this? She gestures to the painting in front of her, of the man with the staunch expression and the curious light in his eyes. My jaw's so clenched that it takes real effort to work my teeth apart. My father, a couple of years before she found out she was pregnant. Amazing how 20 years can change someone. She steps closer, investigating the lines of the man my mother captured with her art. She was generous with him. Made him look less stern than he was, even then. I've never seen the softness she depicted in his face. There's a glimmer of love in the bastard's eyes that's been missing my entire life. She was far better than I'll ever be, I say. Elodie shakes her head. That's not true. You're just as good, Ren, just different. You use the same colors that she used. The tone isn't the same, though. I grunt at that. Yeah, she was optimistic. I've never had that in me. Elodie's eyes convey many things as she looks back at me over her shoulder. Sadness, regret, kindness. The smallest ounce of pity that makes me want to claw my way out of my skin. I suddenly don't want to be in here anymore. As if she can feel me withdrawing, Elodie steps away from the paintings, coming to me, taking my hands in hers. Show me where you sleep. It's a small request, but I'm shot full of nerves by the prospect of showing her my room. Where I'm supposed to sleep, downstairs, or the room I claimed up here. Up here. My heart skitters treacherously as I walk her down the hall and into my room. It's not much. The slope of the roof is steep and means I have to bow my head. There's only a small section of the space where I can stand up straight without risking a concussion. I smirk to myself when I realize that Elodie doesn't have that problem. She's so short that she can stand tall the whole time. She wanders around, inspecting the room from one end to the other, the bookshelf with the well-thumbed copies of my favorite books, the small bed, bigger than a single but a far cry from the huge California king I have back at Riot House, the sweatshirt slung over the back of the chair beneath the tiny window that I forgot when I last came here, the old tennis shoes, and my grandfather's old cracked compass on the windowsill, the notepads and the sketches pinned to the walls, and the candles melted into puddles of wax on the dusty floorboards. She pores over each little detail of the room, assessing and weighing each little thing like she's putting together the pieces of a puzzle that have been missing until now. I watch her silently, my chest aching, my hands burning with the need to touch her. I keep them to myself, though, leaning against the wall, savoring the unfamiliar, troublesome emotions that are digging their roots down deeper and deeper into me, wrapping their tendrils around my bones. I always thought I'd find ultimate happiness within the pages of a book. I've been so convinced of that fact that I've devoted so much of my life to disappearing inside them, searching for that which has always eluded me. I should have known that I wouldn't find what I was looking for on ink and paper. Even the poets entrusted their foolish hearts into the hands of others, especially the poets. That was both their salvation and their ultimate downfall. Without knowing the joy of loving another human being, they would never have been able to write about the soaring joy that always made my heartbeat quicken. And they'd never have been able to capture true desolation and sorrow without enduring the kind of suffering that can only come from lost love. As Elodie spins around, breathing deeply, taking everything in for a final time, I admit something that I've stubbornly refused to ever admit to myself before. I am fucking scared. This girl has no idea the power she holds over me. She can't begin to imagine the lengths I will go to or the worlds I will burn down in my mission to make her happy. Not quite as impressive as my room at Riot House, I say, when she comes to face me. She shrugs, smiling. I like this room just as much. It's yours. I can tell you've spent a lot of time here. I can imagine a younger, less jaded version of you drawing on the bed and sitting in the chair reading Treasure Island. I laugh gruffly, nodding as I look down at my feet. I did both of those things more times than I can count. What's your room like downstairs? She asks. Sterile. Bleak. Empty. She accepts this description without question. I don't want to sleep down there then. I want to sleep here. With all the memories of you before I knew you. Would that be okay? Christ, doesn't she know that I will give her anything she fucking wants? I'll rip out my mangled, blackened heart for her and set it at her feet if it'll please her. Yeah, we can manage that. Won't your father be scandalized if we sleep in the same bed? Probably, but he can go fuck himself. I haven't even considered the fact that we'll be sharing the same bed. The thought of it makes my blood pound at my temples. Elodie, naked and spent, wrapped up in the bedsheets next to me, surrendering herself to unconsciousness, laying in my arms, not knowing what kind of a man I truly am and all the awful, hideous things I've done. I don't deserve it. Fuck, I don't deserve any of this. A loud slamming sound disrupts the peace outside, sharper and more jarring than a gunshot. Elodie jumps. I head over to the window, irritation digging its claws into my back, when I see the black Range Rover that's pulled up in front of the house. Even four floors up, I can hear my father's aggravated bark as he enters the house.
Where is he, Den? Where the fuck is my son?
31. Elodie. Donald Jacoby was a general in the army before he retired a month ago. But men like him never really retire, not in any way that counts. He was a general when he hung up his uniform, and a general he will remain until the day he dies. His very presence seems to swallow up the room as Ren leads me into an enormous, high-ceilinged space that I suppose would have been used as a formal reception room back in the day. I see the back of him first, standing with one hand braced against the mantle of a looming fireplace and the other planted firmly on his hip. He strikes an imposing figure. Ren stands a little straighter, his shoulders pulling back as he clears his throat, announcing our presence.
It's only good manners to call ahead if you're planning on bringing guests to the house, General Jacoby drawls.
He affects a lazy, playful tone, but there's a very real reprimand in his words. He pivots with a flourish, pushing away from the fireplace, and a pair of cold, assessing eyes lands on me. His gaze feels like a knife point being driven up between my ribs. Ren was right. He's nothing like the man in the painting in the attic. His face is a roadmap of lines and crevices that tell a clear story, one of anger and unhappiness. The deep brackets around his mouth and at the corners of his eyes speak of bone-deep unhappiness.
"Introductions, please," he says tightly. "This is Elodie Stillwater. We're at the academy together. Her father's stationed in Israel."
Ren gives him this sparse rundown of me in as few words as possible.
"Elodie, this is my father, General Donald Jacoby, retired."
I think Ren tacks retired on the end of his father's title just to piss him off. Looks like it works, too. "Pleased to meet you, General Jacoby," I say. He gives me a curt nod.
"Sir will suffice. I'm pleased to make your acquaintance too, young lady. Your father's reputation precedes him. I don't doubt that with a father like him, you've had quite the proper upbringing. Your manners do him proud."
I couldn't give a shit about doing my father proud. The colonel is obsessed with making an impression with his betters, though, even if they're no longer an official service member. He'd have a fucking fit if it got back to him that I somehow disgraced myself, and ergo him, during my introduction to Ren's father.
"Israel's a prestigious posting. I've heard things are calm over there these days, but you never know when that might change."
I've never wished for conflict to break out anywhere. The innocent and downtrodden always suffer. That doesn't mean that I haven't hoped that something would happen while my father was outside of the base, though. Some freak accident or an isolated attack of some kind that resulted in Colonel Stillwater's untimely demise. If I'm hellbound for thinking such things, then that's a price I'm willing to pay. Stoke the fires and lay out the welcome mat, I say. So long as I no longer have to bow to my father's crippling authority while I'm alive, then there's no price I'd be unwilling to pay. "Thank you, sir. That's very kind of you to say."
"You've just joined the academy?"
"Yes, sir."
"And you're enjoying it so far? You're enjoying spending time with my son?"
I blush furiously. There's something underhanded about the question, a distasteful insinuation that makes me feel like he's accusing me of something. Yes, sir. The academy itself is beautiful, and the curriculum's challenging. Plus, yes, it helps to have friends there to spend time with during our downtime.
Friends?
General Jacoby looks sharply at Ren. Ren stares right back at him, the muscles in his jaw popping.
Not friends, he says. We're together. She's my girlfriend.
The general gives a curt nod.
Ah, I see. So you're fucking.
Ren doesn't flinch. His eyes narrow ever so slightly, but only for a heartbeat. His facial features are under his complete control.
Yeah, we're fucking, he answers flatly.
It's one thing to have someone's parents know that you're probably having sex. Another thing entirely to have it laid bare like this, and in such blunt terms. I'm so stung that I feel like I've just been slapped. By Ren or by his father, the shock of it feels the same. General Jacoby sighs.
Nice to know you're behaving like a gentleman up there, Ren. That school's one of the most expensive academic institutes in the country, and you're sleeping around now, sullying a family name that's been held in high esteem for many generations?
He shakes his head, disappointment radiating off him.
Honestly, I had hoped you'd conduct yourself a little better.
A cold, searing fire burns in Ren's eyes.
I'm not sleeping around. I'm sleeping with one person. I'd say I was doing a better job at preserving the Jacoby name than you are, Father, given your past indiscretions.
Oh my God. My shoulders hike up around my ears. I would never, could never speak to my father like that. It wouldn't matter who was near. He'd beat the back teeth straight out of my head. It doesn't even bear thinking about. General Jacoby snarls. He's seething. He nods, running his tongue over his teeth.
All right. Well, that's enough of that. Dinner won't be until 7. Why don't the two of you make yourself scarce until you hear the bell? Elodie, in amongst rubbing your body on that boy, why don't you see if you can't rub some of those manners off on him, too?
What the actual fuck? He did not just say that. Again, Ren doesn't show any sign of emotion. I'd be impressed if I weren't so fucking angry. I've never expected a knight in shining armor to ride in on a white steed to rescue me, but some flicker of annoyance on Ren's face would be nice right now. He just blinks at his father.
For someone who puts so much stock in manners, he says, you're the rudest motherfucker I've ever met.
General Jacoby laughs, harsh, unfriendly.
Oh, my darling boy, I'd respect you so much more if you had the stones to come and say that to my face.
Ren doesn't hesitate. He walks right up to his father, and, oh God, I cannot watch it. Whoa, holy fuck. Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. General Jacoby's ready for his son to spit angry words in his face. He's unprepared for the powerful right hook Ren lands on his jaw. I watch, horrified, as the old man staggers into the mantelpiece, throwing out a hand to try and catch himself as he topples backward. It's no good, though. He lands in a heap in the grate, his feet up in the air, in the most undignified display I've ever seen. His face goes bright purple.
Out! Out of my house!
He sputters. His arms and legs are everywhere as he tries to get up again. It takes him 3 attempts to right himself, and when he does find his feet, it turns out that the seat of his expensive black pants is covered in ash. He tries to grab Ren by the scruff of his t-shirt, but Ren smacks his hand away, laughing coldly under his breath.
Try it, he seethes. Go ahead and fucking try it. See what happens next.
The general lowers his